Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in one more night for Mike Malloy. We are covering the president's speech right now. He's speaking at the in the East Room of the White House concerning the debt crisis. We're covering it live, and we'll be back with much more when he's done.
Before we ask hedge fund managers to stop paying taxes at a lower rate than their secretaries, how can we slash funding for education and clean energy? Before we ask people like me to give up tax breaks we don't need and didn't ask for. That's not right. It's not fair. We all want a government that lives within its means, but there are still things we need to pay for as a country. Things like new roads and bridges, weather satellites and food inspection, services to veterans and medical research. And keep in mind that under a balanced approach, the 98% of Americans who make under $250,000 would see no tax increases at all. None. In fact, I want to extend the payroll tax cut for working families. What we're talking about under a balanced approach is asking Americans whose incomes have gone up the most over the last decade, millionaires and billionaires, to share in the sacrifice everyone else has to make. And I think these patriotic Americans are willing to pitch in. In fact, over the last few decades, they've pitched in every time we passed a bipartisan deal to reduce the deficit. The first time a deal was passed, a predecessor of mine made the case for a balanced approach by saying this: would you rather reduce deficits and interest rates by raising revenue from those who are not now paying their fair share? Or would you rather accept larger budget deficits, higher interest rates, and higher unemployment? And I think I know your answer. Those words were spoken by Ronald Reagan. But today, many Republicans in the House refuse to consider this kind of balanced approach, an approach that was pursued not only by President Reagan, but by the first President Bush, by President Clinton, by myself, and by many Democrats and Republicans in the United States Senate. So, we're left with a stalemate. Now, what makes today's stalemate so dangerous is that it has been tied to something known as the debt ceiling, a term that most people outside of Washington have probably never heard of before. Understand, raising the debt ceiling does not allow Congress to spend more money. It simply gives our country the ability to pay the bills that Congress has already racked up. In the past, raising the debt ceiling was routine. Since the 1950s, Congress has always passed it, and every president has signed it. President Reagan did it 18 times. George W. Bush did it 7 times. And we have to do it by next Tuesday, August 2nd, or else we won't be able to pay all of our bills. Unfortunately, for the past several weeks, Republican House members have essentially said that the only way they'll vote to prevent America's first ever default is if the rest of us agree to their deep spending cuts only approach. If that happens, and we default, we would not have enough money to pay all of our bills, bills that include monthly Social Security checks, veterans benefits, and the government contracts we've signed with thousands of businesses. For the first time in history, our country's AAA credit rating would be downgraded, leaving investors around the world to wonder whether the United States is still a good bet. Interest rates would skyrocket on credit cards, on mortgages, and on car loans, which amounts to a huge tax hike on the American people. We would risk sparking a deep economic crisis, this one caused almost entirely by Washington. So defaulting on our obligations is a reckless and irresponsible outcome to this debate. And Republican leaders say that they agree we must avoid default. But the new approach that Speaker Boehner unveiled today, which would temporarily extend the debt ceiling in exchange for spending cuts, would force us to once again face the threat of default just 6 months from now. In other words, it doesn't solve the problem. First of all, a six-month extension of the debt ceiling might not be enough to avoid a credit downgrade and the higher interest rates that all Americans would have to pay as a result. We know what we have to do to reduce our deficits. There's no point in putting the economy at risk by kicking the can further down the road. But there's an even greater danger to this approach. Based on what we've seen these past few weeks, we know what to expect 6 months from now. The House of Representatives will once again refuse to prevent default unless the rest of us accept their cuts-only approach. Again, they will refuse to ask the wealthiest Americans to give up their tax cuts or deductions. Again, they will demand harsh cuts to programs like Medicare. And once again, the economy will be held captive unless they get their way. This is no way to run the greatest country on earth. It's a dangerous game that we've never played before, and we can't afford to play it now. Not when the jobs and livelihoods of so many families are at stake. We can't allow the American people to become collateral damage to Washington's political warfare. And Congress now has 1 week left to act, and there's still paths forward. The Senate has introduced a plan to avoid default, which makes a down payment on deficit reduction and ensures that we don't have to go through this again in 6 months. I think that's a much better approach, although serious deficit reduction would still require us to tackle the tough challenges of entitlement and tax reform. Either way, I've told leaders of both parties that they must come up with a fair compromise in the next few days that can pass both houses of Congress, and a compromise that I can sign. I'm confident we can reach this compromise. Despite our disagreements, Republican leaders and I have found common ground before, and I believe that enough members of both parties will ultimately put politics aside and help us make progress. Now, I realize that a lot of the new members of Congress and I don't see eye to eye on many issues, but we were each elected by some of the same Americans for some of the same reasons. Yes, many want government to start living within its means, and many are fed up with a system in which the deck seems stacked against middle-class Americans in favor of the wealthiest few. But do you know what people are fed up with most of all? They're fed up with a town where compromise has become a dirty word. They work all day long, many of them scraping by, just to put food on the table. And when these Americans come home at night, bone-tired, and turn on the news, all they see is the same partisan three-ring circus here in Washington. They see leaders who can't seem to come together and do what it takes to make life just a little bit better for ordinary Americans. They're offended by that, and they should be. The American people may have voted for divided government, but they didn't vote for a dysfunctional government. So I'm asking you all to make your voice heard. If you want a balanced approach to reducing the deficit, let your member of Congress know. If you believe we can solve this problem through compromise, send that message. America, after all, has always been a grand experiment in compromise. As a democracy made up of every race and religion, where every belief and point of view is welcomed, we have put to the test time and again the proposition at the heart of our founding, that out of many, we are one. We've engaged in fierce and passionate debates about the issues of the day. But from slavery to war, from civil liberties to questions of economic justice, we have tried to live by the words that Jefferson once wrote. Every man cannot have his way in all things. Without this mutual disposition, we are disjointed individuals, but not a society. History is scattered with the stories of those who held fast to rigid ideologies and refused to listen to those who disagreed. But those are not the Americans we remember. We remember the Americans who put country above self and set personal grievances aside for the greater good. We remember the Americans who held this country together during its most difficult hours, who put aside pride and party to form a more perfect union. That's who we remember. That's who we need to be right now. The entire world is watching. So let's seize this moment to show why the United States of America is still the greatest nation on earth. Not just because we can still keep our word and meet our obligations, but because we can still come together as one nation. Thank you. God bless you. and may God bless the United States of America.
You've been listening to the President of the United States speaking from the East Room of the White House. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, covering the live speech of the presidents tonight. We'll also be covering Speaker Boehner, who is going to be speaking, I believe, soon. We don't know how soon on this phony debt crisis wherein the Republicans continue to hold the nation hostage, quite frankly. And we're going to be speaking about it with John Amato of Crooks and Liars shortly. And then in the next hour, we're going to be speaking with Robert Scheer, veteran columnist, journalist, and now editor-in-chief of TruthDig.com. The president basically laid out the two approaches that are now at stake here. He said that he is favoring a balanced approach, wherein we have to live within our means, we have to cut domestic and defense spending by hundreds of billions, cut waste and fraud, and, quote, modest adjustments to Medicare so that it's there for generations. He asks wealthy Americans and corporations to give up some of their tax cuts, and he also says it was a bipartisan plan that he had been working until recently on with Republican House Speaker John Boehner. Now, instead, it seems that the Republicans have bailed on that, and they are insisting on a, quote, cuts-only approach. They will not raise any tax revenue on the wealthiest of Americans. And that's where we're currently at. We'll see what John Boehner has to say. But the president invoked Ronald Reagan, who said that that we can't let the debt limit expire, and he called on the American people to call Congress and let them know if you would like to see this balanced approach. Let me take a quick break here before going to John Amato, who I think we have, so that we come back in case John Boehner is speaking. So hang on the line there, John Amato. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Oh, is now John Boehner?
Of both parties that you elect. These are difficult times in the life of our nation. Millions are looking for work and have been for some time. And the spending binge going on in Washington is a big part of the reason why. Before I served in Congress, I ran a small business in Ohio. I was amazed at how different Washington, D.C. operated than every other business in America. Where most American businesses make the hard choices to pay their bills and live within their means, in Washington, more spending and more debt is business as usual. Well, I've got news for Washington. Those days are over. President Obama came to Congress in January and requested business as usual. He had another routine increase in the national debt, but we in the House said, not so fast. Here was the president asking for the largest debt increase in American history on the heels of the largest spending binge in American history. And here's what we got for that massive spending binge. A new health care bill that most Americans never asked for. A stimulus bill that's more effective in producing material for late-night comedians than it was in producing jobs. And a national debt that has gotten so out of hand, it sparked a crisis without precedent in my lifetime or yours. The United States cannot default on its debt obligations. The jobs and savings of too many Americans are at stake. What we told the president in January was this, that the American people will not accept an increase in the debt limit without significant spending cuts and reforms. And over the last 6 months, we've done our best to convince the president to partner with us to do something dramatic to change the fiscal trajectory of our country, something that will boost confidence in our economy, renew a measure of faith in our government, and help small businesses get back on track. Last week, the House passed such a plan, and with bipartisan support. It's called the Cut, Cap, and Balance Act. It cuts and caps government spending and paves the way for a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, which we believe is the best way to stop Washington from spending money that it doesn't have. Before we even passed the bill in the House, the President said he would veto it. I want you to know I made a sincere effort to work with the President to identify a path forward that would implement the principles of cut, cap, and balance in a manner that could secure bipartisan support and be signed into law. And I'll tell you, I gave it my all. Unfortunately, the president would not take yes for an answer. Even when we thought we might be close on an agreement, the president's demands changed. The president has often said we need a balanced approach, which in Washington means we spend more and you pay more. Having run a small business, I know those tax increases will destroy jobs. The president is adamant that we cannot make fundamental changes to our entitlement programs. As a father of two daughters, I know these programs won't be there for them and their kids unless significant action is taken now. And the sad truth is that the president wanted a blank check 6 months ago, and he wants a blank check today. This is just not going to happen. You see, there's no stalemate here in Congress. The House passed a bill to raise the debt limit with bipartisan support. And this week, while the Senate is struggling to pass a bill filled with phony accounting and Washington gimmicks, we're going to pass another bill, one that was developed with the support of the bipartisan leadership of the U.S. Senate. Obviously, I expect that bill can and will pass the Senate and be sent to the president for a signature. And if the president signs it, the crisis atmosphere that he has created will simply disappear.
More live coverage of the Boehner speech and the President Obama speech here on the Mike Malloy Show. We got to take a quick break, and we will also be joined by John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Right after this, a big night tonight. Please do stay with us.
He can make you love. He can make you cry.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. It's a breaking news night again, like whenever Mike Malloy goes out of town. Anyway, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike. We ran long in that first segment because we wanted to get as much of the president's speech and Boehner's speech on this phony debt crisis as we could. We will have color analysis commentary with John Amato of Crooks and Liars right after we come back from this break, and Robert Scheer a little bit later tonight. You're listening to Brad on the Malloy Show. Yeah, you're listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative citizen journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker, drafted into duty from BradBlog.com here to be the broadcast media as Mike Malloy works his way back from the Progressive Voices Conference over the weekend in Seattle. He will be back with you tomorrow night. And tonight, we are covering the breaking news of this phony debt ceiling crisis that the Republicans have foisted upon us all as they put a gun to the nation's economy, the world economy, and tell us if they don't have it their way, they're taking them all down. They're taking everybody down with them. The president spoke for 15 minutes. We carried as much of that as we could live, followed by John Boehner, who spoke for 5 minutes. The president has called for a balanced approach wherein there are taxes, there are cuts to spending as well as tax revenue increases. John Boehner, on the other hand, says, all we're going to do is cut spending. That's it. End of story. There will be no compromise. Obama has called it a stalemate. John Boehner says there's no stalemate. I don't understand that. So to explain that and much more, we are joined here on the Mike Malloy Show. Oh, I should say the chat room, by the way, is open at bradblog.com. And you can get in with your opinions, if you like, at 877-520-1150. Okay, to help us unwind this ungodly, stupid mess, I'm joined now by the creator, publisher, editor, curator of CrooksandLiars.com, my old friend John Amato. He joins us on the Mike Malloy Show. Hey, John, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Brad, what's happening? I'm so not glad to be here talking about a fictitious crisis.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Can you explain this to me at all, John? You heard the president say that Washington is at a stalemate, and then the most curious item from Boehner's speech there was he says there is no stalemate here in Washington. Huh? Do you understand what the hell he means by that?
No, Boehner's just playing games. you know, this whole we passed legislation in Congress that cut cap and balance, hoax of a bill which is really just a, everybody knows who follows politics, is just a meaningless, stupid political ploy that instead of, you know, working on solving the issue, they're fooling around with bills that are meaningless. So this is how they take their own fictitious crisis. They don't even believe that it is one. It's all about politics, and it's frustrating for progressives, especially since this debt ceiling vote had always been a pro forma event in Congress. It was always just passed and moved along, because, you know, we're talking about raising the debt ceiling to pay, you know, to borrow to pay for money we've already spent. So it's just ridiculous, the whole thing.
It is ridiculous, but how? I don't know how they're going to get out of this, John. I mean, are the Republicans willing to bring down the economy around this phony issue? Is that what this is all about?
Well, the Obama administration certainly has been playing this like they don't believe they'll do that. I mean, remember Boehner and also the little boy Eric Cantor, as well as Paul Ryan, have been huge beneficiaries from taking Wall Street money and Wall Street bribes. And I mean, John Boehner is famous for passing around big tobacco checks on the floor of Congress. So we know where his corporate ties lie,
right?
And they've always taken the approach that Wall Street's, you know, been beating them up already to get this thing passed, because they are the ones that are going to suffer once, you know, if our credit rating is downgraded. But if the markets react, which they know they will. So they've always felt that these guys are going to play politics with it because of the Tea Party caucus and, you know, milk this as much as they can and then pass something. And it's very, like, again, it's very frustrating. So, you know, what did you think about Obama's speech? I mean, I thought he could have been more forceful. He's still, you know, as much as some progressives want to deny, Obama does want to have a grand bargain. And he wants to be the adult in the room.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to put himself above both parties and say, look, I'm willing to make this big compromise, which includes tinkering with our social safety nets, which could raise the ages when we can actually collect, to do this grand bargain, because he brought it up today in the speech. And
I had John Amato. I had a lot of folks who called in on Friday, when we were talking about the same issue, and they were furious that Barack Obama was even considering making cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and particularly Social Security, which is in the black, which is solvent through something like 2036 or 2037. They were furious at him, and yet he persists. Is that a show, John, or is he saying, yes, I really will make these cuts? In other words, is he doing this to highlight who is really the adult here, and that if this whole thing does come down, if the Republicans are really willing to make good on their threats, that, well, at least there was Barack Obama trying to give away as much as he could in order to make a bargain. Is it theater in that sense, or?
Well, you know, again, we all wish that we were in the negotiations. We all wish that we were in the president's head and actually seeing what he's thinking. But, he's talked about a grand bargain for a very long time, and having this bipartisan rising above the fray, not being afraid to anger his base.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that, you know, realistically, he does want a grand bargain. But on the flip side, the Republicans are desperate to get the Democrats to make some sort of what they can call cuts into Medicare, because they are in so much trouble in the next election cycle because of Paul Ryan's budget proposal, you know, that they passed.
Right.
But Paul Ryan has caused them so much grief that, you know, this is the main issue that the Democratic Party has to actually run on in 2012. So the fact is that it appears, as we read news reports, that the Obama team believes that independent voters and a lot of America do believe that deficits are more important at this time than actually trying to stimulate the economy, and they're making their choice, and this is, I believe, what they're doing. Now, do you believe there's a three-dimensional chess match going on? Well, obviously, but I believe he still wants to make that grand bargain, and I would have taken, as much as I loathe to say it, the McConnell plan when he originally talked about it, and I'll take the Reid plan over any kind of a grand bargain.
And let's go through some of those details so that we know what is not currently acceptable by John Boehner and the U.S. House. I'm speaking with John Amato of Crooks and Liars. I am, of course, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. The latest offer this morning, all of a sudden, Harry Reid came out of nowhere and offered what was said to have been exactly what the Republicans had been asking for, at least to a certain extent, and then they turned that down as well. Can you give me an idea, John, what was this offer from Harry Reid that was said to have been so good, yet... the Republicans still said no to it anyway?
Well, the good thing about, the only good thing about the Reid plan, as far as progressive politics and Keynesian economics is concerned, is that it does not touch the social safety nets. It does not touch Social Security. It does not touch Medicare, and it does not touch Medicaid. Now, there are no revenue increases to the plan, but he's basically using cuts that they've already agreed to in the Biden deal, mm-hmm. and then he's gone around and found some other, like, cuts as far as troops that are returning home and other, let's just call them more, bookkeeping kinds of cuts into federal programs that they've come up with extra, another $700 billion $2.4 billion in straight spending cuts. So there's no revenue included, which is what the Republicans have been denouncing. In other words, we cannot raise taxes, we cannot cut loopholes, mm-hmm. we cannot, we can't cut subsidies to oil companies. So Reid's plan is actually doing that. And the fact is that the Republicans now, it appears their strategy is to go the two-step route so that then in the election cycle they can bring back the debt ceiling fight to cover up for their big Paul Ryan fiasco.
And so just to make sense of that, in other words, the Harry Reid, and I think, what was it, $1.2 trillion or $1.7 trillion or something like that?
From the Biden deal, which was like okay. $1.7 trillion, spending cuts in government, which the administration says that they could live with.
And it would have cut spending without cutting social safety programs. It would have moved the debt limit out beyond next year's election, and it would not have raised what the Republicans like to call tax increases, but really are just revenue increases, closing loopholes, and so forth. And yet the Republicans turned it down.
I mean, I have some details. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got $40 billion in integrity savings. It's $30 billion in Fannie and Freddie Mac reforms, mm-hmm. $15 billion in spectrum sales, so $400 billion in interest savings. So there's like, so it's, again, there's no revenues that are being asked as far as even, compromising on Democratic principles, because we believe that especially at a time of a, recession and just high unemployment, you can't cut your way out of unemployment. You can't use austerity measures to then grow the economy. It just doesn't, because now you're laying off so many workers that you put them back into the workforce, they're out of work. And as we've seen, big business has trillions of dollars just sitting and billions on the sidelines. These corporations have been making huge profits during this time, and they're not hiring workers.
I wonder why. Yes, record profits. One of the reasons they're not hiring workers is because they are not the job creators. The people are the job creators when they start spending money. I'm speaking with John Amato of CrooksandLiars.com. You can get in on this conversation if you would like. 877-520-1150. We're going to take a quick break here. But, John, I think the fact that they wouldn't take that deal, that they instead want to, you know, to buy 6 months and put this smack dab right in the middle of the election year, tells us pretty much all we need to know. This is about politics, and this is about taking down the president. It has nothing to do with the country as far as I'm concerned. But we'll find out what John Amato thinks, and we will find out what you think after this quick break. You're listening to Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com here on The Mike Malloy Show. 877-520-1150. Give us a shout. Tell me. Welcome back to the Highway to Hell. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy for one more night here, broadcasting live from the left coast, coast to coast, and around the globe, covering the president's speech tonight, John Boehner's, Speaker John Boehner's reply to it on this debt ceiling showdown that the bill comes due, I'm told, next Tuesday, or at least that's what the president says, next Tuesday when we go straight to hell if this is not all figured out. President's calling for a balanced approach, as he has been now for quite some time, including cuts to spending and revenue increases. John Boehner just says, absolutely not. We will have no revenue increases whatsoever. He claims the president's demands have changed. And meanwhile, the president asks you to call Congress if you are in favor of those balanced, what he calls balanced approach. Our number is 877-520-1150. We're speaking with John Amato of Crooks and Liars. Next hour, we're going to be joined by Robert Scheer. We got some phone lines that are full here, John, so let's you want to try to get in a quick call or two here?
I certainly will. By the way, I have a quick point.
Yeah.
During the debate, I believe it's been reported on Twitter that S&P said that if they adopted Boehner's plan, that we would definitely get a downgrade in our credit rating, but if they went with Reid's plan, we would not be downgraded.
Really? Okay, well, there you go. And as we all know, this is all driven by what the markets want the country to do, and we do what they say. So,
exactly.
Let me get to Reggie in Midland, Texas. Hey, Reggie, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What is on your mind?
Well, I was just curious. You know, I run a small business in Midland, and, I don't understand the situation with our government and how if we continue to raise the debt ceiling, that's akin to me continuing to go to my bank and ask for more money when I'm not making my ends meet. At some point, that's got to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm interested in how we could, number one, if we continue to do that, it's gonna ruin our the federal government and how they pay their bills.
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean it'll ruin the federal government, Reggie? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, they can't pay their bills if they don't get more taxes because their spending is too high. So we have to rein back in the spending and sleep in the bed that we've made over the last 20 years, 30
right.
years, even beyond that.
So you're in favor of the balanced approach that the president was talking about, where he said we need to cut spending and then raise some revenue, like cut spending 4 to 1 versus revenue cuts. You're in favor of that?
I'm absolutely in favor of cutting spending but not raising taxes. That's akin to me telling my employees, hey, I'm going to give everybody a $1 demotion because I can't pay my bills as a business owner, so you're going to have to pay for it for me.
And you're willing to see the faith and credit of the United States brought down to avoid any raises, right?
If that be the case, then that be the case, because we've made our bed and we're going to have to sleep.
Reggie, as a small business owner, I think you're not going to be happy with that decision if what you're calling for comes true. Let me go to John Amato on this. Let me go to John Amato on this, Reggie. Go ahead, John.
you know, there's a common, you know, common theme, which is to equate the American, the U.S. government to everybody's household, and it's a good example, like it's a simple example, but it really doesn't equate because you're talking about, you know, the most powerful nation in the world, and that's not the way government runs. As far as I've also run small businesses like you, Reggie, and so it's not a proper analogy, but if we just got rid of the Bush tax cuts, that would raise revenues, and also during the before the Bush tax cuts, our economy had a huge surplus. So if we did that one thing, which is just eliminate Bush tax cuts, that would help fix a lot of this problem.
Just that alone. In fact, if we did nothing, we would get rid of the deficit at this point. Let me go to Ellen in Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Do you have a quick question for John Amato? Because we're up against the top of the hour.
Okay, well, it's not a question, actually. I'm looking at two articles in The Hill, and one is entitled Boehner Proposal Includes a Vote on Ballot Budget Amendment. If you go to that one, you'll see he lays out his plan. He mentions this joint committee that would be appointed, 12 members, to look at other cuts to things like entitlement.
Right.
And also in The Hill, Reid unveils $2.7 trillion plan and dares GOP to vote against it. In The Hill, that article, same thing. If you read on down, it says right here, I'm looking at it right now, that they will appoint a committee to receive, you know, to review further deficit reduction proposals.
I think they both did, but let me get a response from John since I'm up against the top of the hour.
Okay.
John, the difference being, I think one was a plan would have gone out for a year. John Boehner's plan would have put this all smack dab in the middle of the election year next year, correct?
Right. And also, I mean, I'm not crazy about, you know, appointing these commissions and then, like, you know, and then, like, suddenly it's not the legislature that's making these cuts. It's some commission, right? Our government, that's why we elect people in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. They're supposed to be handling legislature. The president's not supposed to be not only running the country, but then writing all the bills and passing all the legislation. So it is quite frustrating, and we're at a frustrating point. And the biggest thing is that this debt ceiling is a phony, faulty crisis because it's been, as you know, throughout the history of the country, it's just been a pro forma vote.
It is indeed. John Amato of Crooks and Liars. I got to run. I'm sorry. I got to run. I'm up against the clock. Thanks, John. Really appreciate it. Check him out at crooksandliars.com. Robert Sheeran, more of your calls straight ahead on The Malloy Show.